Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Estonia has been in public opinion for a lot of time, and I wouldn't expect it to change for decades to come, to be honest. We are still discussing Titanic, and there are theories about Titanic, if you can imagine.
This is Dr. Andrei Yashinovsky. He's a world expert for forensic naval architect. He's been involved with the Estonia for many years and is working on a current inquiry into the disaster. In this episode, we're going to delve into the high-stakes world of shipwreck investigations. This is The Secret History of the Estonia with me, Stephen Davis. Okay, so marine forensic architect. For those people who wouldn't be familiar with such a job, it sounds fascinating. Tell me in the simplest way you can what that means.
So I am naval architect by training. Naval architecture is an art and science of shipbuilding, ship design, ship operation, which comprises many fundamental fields such as mathematics, physics, engineering, material science, statistics, philosophy, and we try to converge all those different fields into a specific application for shipping.
So if you essentially, if you know how to build a ship, you know how it works, you know how all the parts fit together, you have a good chance of working out what went wrong if it sinks.
I think it's difficult to just answer yes or no. Notwithstanding your knowledge of shipbuilding, ship design, and ship operation, unless the evidence available on that accident allows you to come to a conclusion, it is not sufficient to say what happened. Simply because just knowing how to build and how to operate and how to design does not tell you what may happen in a three-dimensional space. So we need some systematic way to connect all the evidence that we have, say the wreckage, the weather, witness statements, and so on, to try to figure out in reverse engineering to a chain that would explain where the ship is.
So tell me, where were you and what were you doing when you heard the Estonia had sunk?
In 1994, I was a student, third year student at the Technical University of Gdansk in Poland, so very close to Baltic Sea, and I've heard the news in the morning just before I went to my lectures back then, and I have been involved in that case in one way or another ever since.
So you were at university, you were always intending to do this sort of job, marine investigations?
No, I was a student of naval architecture. I did not anticipate at the time, I was roughly halfway through the university, what I would be doing. It took me up a path, this path, which was another ferry that capsized in the channel. It was, I think, Herald of Free Enterprise. So I worked for UK Maritime Coast Guard Agency back then, and I studied how ferries sink.
The Herald of Free Enterprise was another roll-on, roll-off ferry, the same type as the Estonia. It capsized in 1987, killing 193 passengers and crew. It left the harbour with the bow doors wide open, and within minutes it was on its side. The ship was salvaged, along with the bodies. It was a huge story at the time.
By mid-afternoon, the Herald of Free Enterprise had been successfully hauled out of the 12-foot seabed trench into which she'd settled, and in perfect calm, bright weather, the refloating operation could begin.
So you were involved in the investigation into the Herald of Free Enterprise. I covered that story, actually, for the Sunday Times in London. A terrible tragedy, but I guess as an investigation, much more straightforward than the Estonia in terms of its causes.
I think that I can say in all honesty, there is no such thing as simple in any accident. There is so many contentious elements, issues and unknowns that there is simply no way to categorize any investigation as simple. So perhaps the controversy of Estonia comes from the emotive reaction, societal reaction. It's the biggest peacetime catastrophe in Western Europe since the Titanic. But technically, it is as challenging as any other investigation, which is very challenging, if I may say so, from my perspective, doing this day to day as a full-time job. There are so many aspects to investigate and explore that it takes time, effort, and a lot of sweat to come to a simple sentence that then will look simple and answer what happened, hopefully convincingly and acceptably to both the profession and public.
You make an interesting point there. I guess the public and we would be to blame as well in the media. We always want one simple explanation for a catastrophe or disaster. One, like you said, one sentence, one headline, one thing we can point to. But in your experience, these things often have more than one cause or a set of complicated things happening which add together to cause a disaster.
Yes, indeed. It is natural for us to want to hear an answer in 3 seconds and then move on. It is very unfortunate from my viewpoint, but unfortunately that's where the society is. In reality, to get to a conclusive answer takes an awful lot of effort.
And one of the things you told me previously, the first time you looked at Estonia, one of your issues is you simply didn't have enough information to reach any full conclusions.
We've never had all the information. For example, we have the shipwreckage, and the shipwreckage is still underwater. When we have precedents, it's a state-of-the-art industry that would allow us to retrieve the vessel and examine it in minute detail on shore. So we don't have all the information that is within grasp. We rely on ROVs and so remote operated vehicles, video footage, divers footage, and of course statements from witnesses. And so I think that even if we retrieved the vessel, there would still be question. But I can say that we haven't recovered all the evidence that it would have been possible to do. Basically, there is no will to retrieve all the evidence. So we have to act within the perimeter of the evidence that we do have, such as the recent measurements with new state-of-the-art photogrammetric technologies and ROVs. But that also is not conclusive to the point where it could not be challenged.
Just to be clear, as you said before, to have a thorough survey of the Estonia required bringing it up and putting it on land and examining it on land. And you're saying that that was an operation that could have been done. The technology existed. It was possible to do.
Yes, it is possible to recover entire wreckage. It has been done in the past on other ferry disasters. So there is the proof. There is, it's not a speculation. There is no question about that whatsoever.
and looking at it on land would have markedly increased the strength, the level of the evidence that you had to find out why it sunk.
Yes, absolutely. Bringing the ship on shore allows to examine it by surveying, you know, every square meter of the wreckage can be examined, every piece can be looked at, and it can be done collectively by a multitude of different experts and expertise investigators. So it's, I think, that's where the state of the art in terms of evidence collection would be. That state of the art has not been applied to Estonia as of yet.
This is something that's been mentioned in previous episodes, but to hear an expert naval architect say it, that it's totally possible to raise the wreck, really brings it home. And to then explain that this is the state of the art for the industry, but for some reason it hasn't been applied to the Estonia, just adds to the mystery as to why it hasn't been done. Just as a small diversion here, I want to talk about the dive footage that was taken in the months after the sinking. The Swedish government hired their own diving team from Rockwater, a British-based division of an American company. Interestingly, its parent company was run between 1995 and 2000 by Dick Cheney, later US Vice President. There were even rumours of CIA connections. Anyway, this diving team produced 13 videotapes showing the wreck, they said, from every angle. But it seemed that one angle was missing, and some Swedish politicians later argued the videos had been edited. This is another example of the challenges that investigators have had to work with over the years. Let's return to Dr. Yashinovsky. He's been involved in multiple investigations. I asked him to tell me about the first one.
I think it was about 97, 98, so many years ago. And that involved review of what had been done by then. There was the official JAIC report issued by then, and which stirred a lot of discussion and public conferences. So I started early on to attend those conferences. And at that time, it was in view to develop knowledge on how to design such ships and how to develop regulations. And as we did that, we did have questions on what happened, and we were not satisfied with what was said publicly, what was discussed, and what the evidence was already back then.
And then you were later on hired to help with a reinvestigation?
Yes, we did engage in a project with the Swedish Innovation Agency. So it was a two-year project between 2006 and 2008. It had a fairly narrowly defined scope of what was to be investigated. And we complied with that, conducted the research and concluded.
What was the scope?
The scope was to focus on the mechanisms of the sinking that were most likely prevalent over that accident, and to explain it in a way that could be understood by others. I think our criticism beforehand was that the investigation that was officially conducted was not conclusive enough, and we simply tried to fit that gap. There were also various propositions on how the accident could have developed from the sinking point of view, and so there were different hypotheses to test, such as, say, a collision with some object on the surface. Perhaps there were hypotheses of some explosions that were put forward back then. So we tried to investigate all such initiating events and try to examine mechanisms that would have led to a chain that was observed by the witnesses, and of course that would have led the ship to sink to the position and in a way that we see it today.
Did you feel that you had enough information at that stage, enough evidence had been gathered to do a complete investigation?
We, I think, had succeeded to make a step further forward from where it was before we begun, we had concluded the investigation with a proposition that there still are questions outstanding. And so we proposed that the ship be raised or at least inspected. We proposed that the ramp be lifted up. We have made a step forward, but we have concluded that there still are questions that should be answered by the evidence that was, in our view back then, within grasp, and that is raising the ship.
And at one stage you were about to present your findings to a conference, and you had an interesting visit beforehand from two people from the Swedish government. Tell me about that.
To start with, Stephen, just going back to the beginning, I think we've had two or three international open workshops where any party could have participated and discussed and contributed to that. So it was completely open investigation from our side. We were open to any input from any party of any kind. And at the end of it, there was a notable interest by numerous parties, one of which was a meeting with the Department of Psychological Defense.
The government department he mentions there is the Psychological Defense Agency. Their mission statement is safeguarding Sweden's, and I'm quoting here, open and democratic society and the free formation of opinion through identifying, analysing and countering foreign malign information influence, disinformation and other misleading information. A bit of a mouthful, and I'm not sure that definition clarifies much. Anyway, let's return to Dr. Yashinovsky describing his meeting with this mysterious government agency.
So we made our proposition, explained why we think there needs to be more investigation of the wreckage. We, of course, explained what the investigation itself was, how we arrived at conclusions. So we had conveyed that to that meeting with the Department of Psychological Defense in Stockholm. Nothing was done after our recommendation, absolutely nothing. So my obvious take is that they have dismissed everything we said.
Wasn't it weird to be talking to a Department of Psychological Defense? It sounds Orwellian.
I cannot comment on the motivations for the meeting. We have met with anyone, anybody, any party that was willing to discuss, truly internationally. So all the experts from the world would come and would discuss this. In hindsight, now when you put it like this, and of course the name itself, you wonder, you know, what could have been the motivation. I cannot, tell, other than say that it's part of the government, and in one way or another, they were interested, and so we shared whatever we could share, you know, openly, honestly, and hopefully it added value to whatever their objectives were.
The Psychological Defense Agency is another secretive Swedish department that people are reluctant to talk about. It was started during the Cold War, and it ran exercises stress-testing the reactions of military personnel and civil servants to major incidents. It ran disinformation operations against the Soviet Union. It was a small department which employed a number of scientists, and its original motto was, "The will to defend Sweden is strong." What were they doing inserting themselves into the investigation of a major civilian transport disaster? We can only speculate, but it is part of a consistent pattern linking secretive parts of the Swedish government to the Estonia investigations. And as we have seen, there's been no shortage of investigations into the fate of the Estonia. Remember the Greg Bemis inquiry? The metal pieces cut from the sunken ferry by his diving team were analysed by two teams of experts, one working for the ferry builders, Meyer, and one independent group in the US. Both found evidence of an explosion. You might think a revelation like that would lead to a new official inquiry, but no. The Swedish government simply countered with its own metal analysis, disputing the explosive findings. the battle between those supporting the conclusions of the official report and those challenging it has gone on. After the break, we'll hear from one of the challengers, a man who's dedicated many years to investigating the Estonia. He's the former chief prosecutor of Estonia, the country. He was asked to review the official report, and since then, he's found many, many gaps in the account. We'll hear from Margus Kerm after this.
Do you want more Crowd podcasts?
Let me tell you about the Crowd Stories channel.
It's where you can find all of Crowd's documentaries.
In one place.
And for just £1 a week, they're ad-free.
Addictive documentaries like American Vigilante.
I'm a monster hunter. It's what I do.
And Murder in House 2.
I don't know what happened. You want to keep it to yourself? You shoot yourself. You're going down.
You can binge our groundbreaking audio fiction series, Eliza, A Robot Story.
I have 302 minutes, 34 seconds, and 2 milliseconds to tell this story.
And immerse yourself in the stories of death of a rock star.
Just search for Crowd Stories on Apple Podcasts.
And hit the subscribe button.
See you there.
That's a sort of freedom, like an intrinsic knowledge, like you are part ocean, ocean is part you. You have salt water in your body. You are part of this.
Oceans, life underwater. A new podcast all about the oceans and the mind-blowing life within them.
Subscribe now to Oceans, Life Underwater on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to the secret history of the Estonia. So, as I mentioned, Margus Kerm is the former state prosecutor for Estonia, the country. In 2005, he was appointed the chairman of an Estonian commission to investigate the case.
Our first task was to investigate the probable smuggling of military equipment on board. When I started this investigation and first went to Sweden, they were very supportive, and they said that you can meet whoever you want, you can get documents and so on. But the more deeper I went with my questions and with my request, the more arrogant they were in answering. And basically, in the end, they said that no, you won't get this information. You won't meet those people. Basically, they said that you may write whatever you want into your report. We will accept anything, but we will not give you certain information. And actually, this meant that our investigation really led to nowhere. We only stated that the Estonian authorities were not involved.
So what kind of things did you want to get from the Swedes that they wouldn't give you? I mean, talk to intelligence officers, presumably?
Yes, that was one of my requests, which was rejected. I wanted to meet and question this intelligent officer who was in charge of this operation. That was one example. And I asked also all the documents related to this operation or similar operations, and I did not get any.
Did they bother to give you an excuse, or did they just say no?
Regarding documents, I remember they said that they don't have any. And I remember that they also had an investigation in Sweden, and I remember the judge who was in charge of this investigation, he said to me that he destroyed all the documents, which sounded very, very strange.
When I was investigating this, what really struck me was, and I've been an investigative journalist for a long time, if a judge in the UK or the US or Australia or New Zealand or lots of other places I've worked did an investigation in such an important story and then turned around and said he destroyed the documents, there would be a national outcry. There would be demands for a new inquiry, yet nothing seemed to have happened in Sweden.
That's true. It was unbelievable. It was difficult to believe, and I remember my first thought was that that's not true. They simply don't want to share the documents with me. And actually, I don't know which is the truth. It's very unusual to hide so important documents.
So after that, did you sort of move on to your life or other things? Was there something in the back of your mind that thought, I would still like to get to the bottom of this one day?
Actually, this investigation of our commission went on. Meaning that we were given a new task by the government. And the new task was to study if there are any unanswered questions or are there any aspects which had not been investigated properly by this Joint Accident Investigation Commission, I mean the official commission. And then we started to review all the material collected by this official commission, and of course we found several problems regarding the official investigation, that the government prolonged our mandate once more, and our last task was to follow and give an overview about those scientific investigations which were going on at the same time in Sweden.
Margus Kurm prepared an overview of these studies for the Estonian government. He continued this work for 4 years.
In the course of this work, I went through basically everything which I was able to find, and I met many people, survivors and scientists and so on.
And at the end of the 4 years, you thought there's something wrong with the official explanation?
Yes, I understood that the official explanation is not correct, or at least it's not really supported by the evidence. And there is, let's say, many important technical aspects which had never been investigated. After those 4 years, that was my understanding, that we don't actually know why the ship sunk at that night.
One of the things that struck me about looking at the original official investigation was that they didn't bother to talk to many of the survivors to get their stories about what happened during the sinking. That would have seemed to me to be an important part of an investigation. I've talked to lots of survivors who were never talked to by the investigators.
Yeah, actually, that's not completely correct. There are, I think, about 5 survivors who had never been interviewed by the authorities. But most were interviewed, but not by this commission of investigators, but right after the disaster by the police. They have shared their first memories and first impressions. And the problem is that the information is incomplete and very eclectic. People told what they wanted to tell. And of course, people are different. Some talked a lot, but some talked very, very little. And of course, there were some questions asked by the police officers, but what is lacking is a real structural interview of every single survivor. So, to put it shortly, what we know about the survivors' experiences is very eclectic bunch of information. And if you want to really to make analysis, for example, what was the pattern of the experiences, you can't really make it up, because it's one person have thought about one thing and the other is thought about this another thing, and it's it's impossible to do a very structural analysis. And of course, as regards the interviews made by the Estonian police, at that time it was common that those, let's say, the minutes of those interviews, there were very short handwritten minutes. Many of them was done in airports. And of course, if you make handwritten minutes, you cannot be very, let's say, complete. You can make only notes. But this is all we have.
So after this, you ended up this inquiry, this four years with, obviously, with doubts, and the real explanation for the sinking hadn't come out. How did you get involved again later? What got you back into it?
I dare to say that I have been in since 2005. I have never finished this case, and I have always been following, and I have been in contact with relatives. It was 2015 when we discussed the idea with the relatives in Sweden to start a court case against the Estonian government to demand a new investigation.
You must be, I mean, there must be people in the Estonian government who regard you as a bit of a, what I'd say in English, as a bit of a pain. I mean, this is something that they wanted over with a long time ago, and here you are, a former state prosecutor, just keeping going. That you must be irritating some people.
Probably, yes. Probably I have been a trouble for them.
But you want the truth to come out.
Yes, the truth come out, and yes, whatever the truth is, it should be backed by the evidence. As long as we have important questions unanswered, the case is not closed.
Next time, on the secret history of the Estonia.
We went down to the wreck, and it was wonderful visibility down there. And we started out to investigate the starboard side quite immediately, because we thought perhaps this is the only chance we have.
This put immense pressure on the Swedish government, and almost the same day, the heads of state of the involved countries were out commenting on the matter, which they had not done for almost decades.
The Secret History of the Estonia is a Crowd Network original. It's presented by me, Stephen Davis, and produced by Samantha Syke. Mixing and sound design is by Rory Auskery. The music we use is from our partners, BMG Production Music. To listen to the entire series ad-free, and for exclusive bonus episodes, subscribe to the Crowd Stories channel on the Apple Podcasts app. You can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music. If you're looking for something new, try .com, The Hacking. It's all about Russian ransomware attacks, cyber criminals, and the ethical hackers trying to stop them. Just search for .com wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.